This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
You know what was like a weird emotion I had the other day is I was coming back from a trip and I get a call from my wife, and she's saying that my boy, my oldest boy, has been invited to go fishing with his buddy and that buddy's dad. And it was like, it felt like my old lady was going out on a date with another guy.
That's what you said?
Yeah. Made me feel
did
jealous.
Did you get over that?
Yeah, I got over it because I realized it's like, you know, that's like a totally unfair feeling, but it felt like I was getting cheated on. He'd never gone fishing. I started like fishing with my brothers, I think, a little bit, maybe up at our shack or something. He'd never fished with another man. And it like left me feeling, I was jealous. My initial feeling was like, of course. But in the back of my mind, I was feeling jealous. Then he wound up catching a fish. Brought home the fillet. He's all excited. Ate a bunch of it last night.
Yeah, it's probably good for him, too, to have other teachers.
Yeah, but I was just hoping they'd get skunked. So he'd be like, if you want to catch fish, you got to go with the old man. But now he's like, anybody can catch fish.
Did he come home with anything like, oh, we did this different, or so-and-so doesn't?
No, but if you turn around, you'll see that rig right there. That's what he caught. That's what he caught a silver on. He caught this little dinker, like 12-inch king that they turned out, and then he caught a silver on that. Sounds like the dude he was with, which is pretty nice. Like, dude he was with, the way my kid tells it is the guy says, hey, hold this rod. I got to do something. I got to run an errand on the boat. And the way my boy tells it is the minute he held the rod, wham, a fish hit. But I feel like I got to check. I haven't chatted with him yet. I feel like what happened was maybe he hooked the fish,
right.
A slick move, right?
Yeah.
To not be like, hey, sonny, there's a fish on here, but just hand him the rod and let him have like the discovery one being honored. So I feel like he was pretty shrewd, which makes me think he's a good guy. But then he brought the fish home. He brought one fillet home. He said another family kept the other fillet because there's like a couple guys out there with kids. And so he brought one fillet home. And I took my Japanese bone pickers and picked the bones out. And then it sounds grody, but it's not, man. You ever just take mayo and seasoning salt and lemon and herbs like parsley or whatever and mince it up, mix it all together, and just like layer that, spread that on the fish.
And then cook it.
And then broil
it. Yes.
That is good shit, man. But you tell people like you're going to coat it in.
Yeah, it sounds weird.
You just got to say I'm coating it in a sauce.
Yeah.
Rather than saying basically I'm coating that some bitch in mayo.
We need to go back to Japanese bone picker.
Oh, my Japanese bone pickers? I have genuine stainless steel Japanese bone pickers.
I mean, looks just like a fancy pair of tweezers?
Nope. Looks like a fingernail clipper.
But not sharp.
Yeah. You know what's funny, too, about picking bones out of salmon? Is when I'm talking about picking bones, I'm talking about picking the pin bones, right? Like, when you flay a salmon, or you know, any number of fish, you can either like take the flay off with the ribs and then just rib it in one piece. Just take all the ribs out. Comes off like a pane of glass, you know. Or you take the ribs off. Or you either flay around the ribs and leave the ribs connected in their rightful place, connected to the spine. Or you take the whole damn thing off, ribs and all, and then rib it. But the pin bones, particularly on a salmon, you just grab them with a pair of needle nose. But my Japanese bone pickers are amazing. I like them. But the funny thing is, what I found is when that fish is in like a rigor state, even if it's just a fillet, it's very difficult to pull those bones.
Mm.
If you set it like
the muscles hanging on to
it. Yeah, like if you freeze a fish and then pick the bones, they pick easy. If you catch a fish and go to pin bone it right away, it's difficult. You set it in your fridge overnight, it's easy to pick.
So if you EKG made it, it'd be easy to pick.
I bet if you EKG made it, the Japanese bone pickers would work even better. Yeah. But you can use these pickers. You can pick all kinds of fish with them. And the reason I'm calling them Japanese is they actually came with, there was no English on the package. I ordered them after finding out about them. I was looking at a Japanese cookbook that you got to read from back to front. And it's just pictures of how to like cut up every fish on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, they're always picking bones. And I was like, what the hell are those? And so I got to sniffing around online and I found those bone pickers for $9. Nice.
$9.
Yeah, but it's just one more thing you got to worry about someone losing, man.
Yeah.
Like when I see my kids with those, it makes me want to kill them. Much as I like them.
Speaking of ordering stuff, I ordered a pair of fishing pliers.
Did you? Yeah, I got a new rule where I don't fish with grown-ups who don't have their own fishing pliers. And now I don't backpack with grown-ups who don't have their own Steripen to sterilize water. I'll probably come up with more shit like this as time goes by, but that's where I'm at right now with being rigid about people being, mainly it's fishing pliers, man.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt when you got to constantly be finding yours, taking them off the lanyard, passing them around.
Yeah, and with salt water, you know, like all the stuff's real heavy, so you can't get through it, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like you, like I wore a groove in my teeth, cutting line on my teeth, but you can't cut my 80-pound
Yeah,
braid.
I'm always out there with my pocket knife cutting through the 80-pound mono, and that's just not safe in a rocking boat when you just got that knife, you know, out and about all the time.
Speaking of gear, not speaking of salmon fillets, not speaking of mayo, but speaking of gear, what we're going to do, we're doing a thing here. This is for all the mugs that are always writing in, like asking like super specific gear questions. Gear, so like, I like to think about it more than I really like to talk about it. Kind of, that's kind of true. And I've even got, we used to argue so vehemently about gear that for a while I tried to have it be that I would not engage in any conversation arguing about the merits of various gear pieces. But we're going to do a big major gear deal here because Yanni is going on a extracurricular hunting trip right now. So he's all packed up to go for how long? A week.
Yeah, roughly a week.
So he's going hunting for about a week with his bow and arrow for elk during the elk rut. Where he's, so a little background here, where he's going, it would, if you were gone for a week, I would expect it to be in the 70s sometimes. And I would expect it to be dumping wet ass snow on you sometimes.
Yeah. I think that's a safe assumption.
It's like you will have a morning, not for sure, but like a very good chance. You will have mornings where you wake up and there's 6 inches of just sopping wet slush on all your shit. And you will wake up and you will have midday periods when you're moving to a new area and you got to hike 3 or 4 miles into a new zone. When it's uncomfortably hot, right?
Yeah. And I expect you could have, you know, not only that, I was thinking about sun protection, you know, for those moments. So you want to be like stripped down so you're comfortable, but you also need sun protection. So, you know, like long sleeve versus sunscreen, what kind of hat do you want for it? But, yeah, I could imagine, not just that, but like maybe possibly finding a bedded herd, you know, that's on a ridge or something, and you're moving in for the kill, or you get within, you know, shooting range, and then you're sitting there at 2 p.m. knowing damn well that those elk probably aren't going to stand up until 6, and you're just exposed and you need to be protected because it might be just beating down sun.
Yep.
Or it could be spitting hail.
And another thing to keep in mind, you're kind of in the, You're dead center in a population of about 800 grizzlies. So you'll see some little mentions of that in there.
Give or take a couple hundred.
Give or take a couple hundred. No. Yeah, maybe more.
Yes. It's been referred to, as I've been planning for this trip, it's been referred to as the grizzly pit.
Yes. Yeah. It's just like, well, we were in a zone not long ago, and we saw 6 or 7 in a couple. What did we see?
Seven.
In a few days. Different bears, all, you know, seven different ones, including some youngsters in there. Now, all right. Talk about, like, run through the duds you bring. And this is, like I said, this is, like, something that people pester, not pester about, but just ask so much about. And also, before we get into this, keep in mind, the stuff we're going to be talking about isn't just necessarily for this, but this is, like, 90% what you'd use no matter what you were going to do.
Yeah, definitely. I think you just really make adjustments. Certainly temperature, you know, as the year goes on, it gets colder. You're going to expect more snow. So that's when something like, you know, we'll make adjustments towards that. We can talk about that later. And
you might have a shooting iron instead of a bow and arrow.
Exactly. And you might have different optics, you know, or extra optics. But yeah, I feel like the base is pretty much always going to be the same, you know. Little accessories here and there, but little accessories add up to a lot of weight sometimes.
So you only tote one, like, you got one pair of socks?
No, so
that's your extra.
I broke down my we'll just jump in with the duds, the clothing, and I broke it down into like what I'm probably going to be wearing 90% of the time. And then what's probably going to be in my backpack most of the time.
So you're only wearing one pair, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I'll have basically one pair as an extra.
Do you remember in the old days when you're kids and you thought that like putting more socks on?
Yes.
And then putting bread bags on them was like going to be like the ticket to warmth? Holy, yeah.
Cotton socks, nonetheless.
Yep. When you're putting your boots on, trying your boots on, you need to make sure that you can freely wiggle your toes around. Or else you will be a cold little hunter. So you got one of them on, and then you run merino boxers.
Yeah.
See, that's the deal, man. This is like, you know, the old boxers briefs thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a boxers man, and you're kind of stuck. Like,
oh, boxers versus briefs, not boxer briefs.
No. Boxers versus briefs.
Yeah.
I'm not a boxers man. I was, but I'm not. And that's a real Achilles heel.
For you.
Cotton. It's the one cotton thing.
Hold on. I know that there's companies that make non-cotton briefs.
Well, they make those weird synthetic-y ones.
Yeah, don't like them.
Those ones you can like wash in the hotel sink and dry them out real fast? No, don't like them.
Hmm.
Yeah, man. It's like the weak link in the gear is that one cotton thing.
Yeah, because they certainly, I feel like those, and the ones I use and most of our crew uses, the First Light Red Desert, I believe they're called, boxer shorts, and they come down, you know, my long legs, like almost to the tops of my knees.
Yeah.
So I feel like with those, and then if I, you know, pull up a long pair of socks to the bottom of my knees, it's like you almost have a whole second layer covering, yeah, you know, your legs underneath your pants.
But doesn't it get hot in there?
You know,
and doesn't your scroll get banged around a lot?
The merino, they're not that loose, right? They're like tight fitting merino wool box. They're not loose at all, actually. They don't fit probably quite as tight as briefs, but no, and they actually can prevent chafing, right? Like, I don't have that problem because I got chicken legs, but if you're like a thick thighed fella,
where your thighs are rubbing,
or gal, yeah, your thighs are rubbing, that can prevent, you know, little chafing down there.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, yeah, I'm going, like, and I'm going to really try to stick to this list. I'm actually going to pack probably tonight and finish packing in the morning and then go, and then I'm walking into the woods tomorrow. But I'm going one pair of boxer shorts.
Like, just the ones you got on.
Just the ones I got on.
But that's a good move because people, like, the more stuff you, like, the more clothes and things, I feel like a lot of people bring too many socks, too many underwear, and it's just stuff to manage.
Well, manage, and like we had the luxury, like on a lot of our hunts where we like recently got flown in, and so a couple, 3, 4, even 10 pounds of extra gear, it's just going to sit in my tent. I'm not really packing it around because when we leave to go hunt or whatever, now we're packing around plenty of other stuff because we're working, so there's cameras and batteries and whatnot, but here, I'm really like, there's none of that stuff. This is purely for fun. And so there might be times when I'm actually having my whole camp and all my gear on my back, and I might be chasing elk. And I know from experience, from the first time I ever did that, I walked into the woods with, I think, with all my water. Well, with, I think it was roughly 3 liters of water on my back. I was chasing elk around with like a 55 to 60 pound pack. Very quickly, like after the first morning, I was like, I need to change. I need to like figure out a different system. Because when you're like, you're chasing a bugling bull and you got 55 pounds on your back, you're not like, you're not the same hunter as you are if you have your little day pack on your back. It's a big difference. You know, your legs are getting smoked. Because in your mind, you're like, oh my gosh, bugling bull, run, 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 run. And then an hour later, your legs are like, dude, what's this all about?
You know? Yeah, I know. That's heavy. But I think a lot of guys like just, I don't know. I feel like some guys just like overdo it and think about it.
They do. But here again, I mean, we can go down this rabbit hole and go on forever. But if you really want to chase elk with your camp on your back and be able to stop at the end of the day and then just be there and not use the time and energy to go back to camp.
Yep.
You have to be fairly light.
All right. So got your socks and undies.
We got that far.
Now, you might bring some sneakers. Or you're running like mountain hunting boots?
I think I'm going to go and this is a place where it's going to be extra weight, but these high top sneakers, I figure for my size, I think I just looked up the weight. They're like 14 ounces for a pair of nines.
Okay.
Okay. So under a pound, I'm sorry. Yeah. They were under a pound.
Yeah. But you got
so for a pair of 12s, I'm looking at probably a little bit over a pound, right? There's not that much more there. And
you want them for sneaking up?
Couple things. Like I've got Morton's Neuroma in my feet, which is like the Morton's Neuroma.
I know you got feet problems. I didn't know they had a name.
Yeah, it's basically like nerves getting agitated by metatarsal bones, and it creates like after a while, usually around 5 or 6 miles, it can create some immense pain to the point where you just like want to stop walking, take your shoes off. Eat ibuprofen. It's bad. The softer the midsole is in a pair of shoes, the longer I can go without getting to that.
Yeah.
Like the stiffer that midsole is, the more quickly it starts to agitate and it hurts. So having an extra pair of sneakers, especially if I'm on a trail, say I'm packing in or packing out, I'll carry my heavier, you know, mountain boots on my back, even though that's, you know, 4 or 5 pounds back there, because I know at some point I'm going to be running across the side of a mountain on some shale and I'm going to want those. But so I can just bang out 5, 6, 7 miles on a trail quickly, comfortably, and not have my feet hurt. Yeah.
And then you put your bear tooths on.
Mm-hmm. And again, something we didn't talk about is I'm going hunting with your brother, right? So yep. We got llamas. He's already in the woods. I'm going in there to meet him. I need to be self-sufficient just in case for whatever reason, we don't come together. I need to be, you know, prepared. But something like this, if I was only going by myself, I might consider just not bringing my, you know, mountain hunting boots and just be going in my sneakers.
But knowing that once you get way back in there, you might hook up and
exactly
put some shit on the llamas.
Yeah, so I don't have to carry quite as much food in because he's already carried some food in. Obviously, the llamas will, if we kill, they'll be packing meat out, so I won't have to carry as much out.
So if I was in your situation, depending on the weather, I would be running my Schnee's bear tooths, and if it was really cold, I'd bring my little down booties, my little down. Mm. It's like kind of like a sock, kind of like a thing at night. If you want to like stretch out, but this time of year, I would never bother with it.
Right.
Yeah. And then a merino wool t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all for your, so just for like one's body on a mixed climate hunt.
Yeah.
A base layer t-shirt. A base layer long sleeve.
That's right. Which is going to be the Chama hoodie from First Light.
And no beanie cap. Because that son of a bitch has a hood.
Yeah. Not only that, but I'm also going to have my, for my insulation, I'm going to have my, and this is something I wanted to discuss and talk about because again, we get so much experience by shooting the show that we get to try a lot of things and really, you know, when you're just on long hikes back to camp, you're thinking about, okay, you know, my beanie's in my pocket. I haven't worn it for 2 days. And I realized that was happening a lot to me where I'm just like, oh, because sometimes you get that like earache, you know, when you've been wearing a beanie too long. And yeah, I just wasn't using it because like a lot of our gear has hoods on it, right? So between like the wool hoodie on the Chama hoodie, then the Uncle Progre jacket, which has the insulated hood, and then a rain jacket, which has a hood. I figure in some pretty darn right shitty cold conditions, if I put those three hoods on, I'm going to be pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
And I know that the beanie is, it's ounces, right? It's probably a quarter pound. But yeah, I'm leaving it.
You know what I flirt back and forth with is running what I call the Remy Warren, which is a baseball hat. And then you just put the beanie
over it.
Yeah. Because Remy like has a trick where he doesn't always run a tripod with his binos, but he's got like the Remy Warren, the move that I call the Remy Warren is a three-part move. One, it's an insulation move. You always have a baseball cap on and you pull a large beanie over that to keep warm. But then when he's running his, when he's using his binos, he holds his hands around his binos and grabs the bill of his hat.
Right.
And it's, if your hat's tight and you're grabbing your binos and the bill of your hat, it works good. It stabilizes. Yeah.
And I think he also, he carries the hiking pole a lot, doesn't he? And uses that to stabilize.
Uses that too.
Yeah.
But like, I kind of do that, but it's also kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The hood, the ball cap.
Yeah.
Beanie combo. And then for a long time, I wear, like, a lot of times I wear like that First Light brim beanie. But that's not rigid. That's not like a rigid setup for stabilizing binos.
No, that wouldn't work for that. I feel like the one thing you're getting from a baseball hat, right, is basically shade for your eyes and some sun protection for your eyes, which is crucial. You got to have something that provides you that. But the fact that most baseball hats are cotton, I feel like is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, they make them all out of goofy shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, now they have like technical fabric, you know, baseball hats.
I shouldn't say all, but yeah, there's a lot of bad material baseball hats out of there.
Yeah.
The mesh stuff that chafes your ears.
Right.
But
I think since we're on hats, I'm also not bringing a baseball hat. I'm going with it's like a lightweight, breathable, it's a boonie hat is what you call it, right? It's like a bucket with I don't know, it's probably like a 3-inch brim that goes all the way around.
Yeah, boonie hat.
Boonie hat, yeah. Very lightweight, very packable, would dry super fast, but it goes all the way around. And I've noticed, especially when we're sitting around in the sun, glassing, it's nice to have that protection, not only over your face and your eyes, but now my ears are covered. Hopefully at least part of the back of my neck is covered. And for me, it's just more comfortable.
I've never been a boonie hat guy. I don't like the feeling of that back brim rubbing against my backpack. I don't like when I'm leaning against stuff, having that thing. Yeah, I've never liked them. But you got a pad. You got a pad of Gucci boonie hat.
Yeah. And again, I'm hoping.
I got such a love hate with that organization.
Right.
Yeah, I love a lot of. Yeah. Anyhow, so Yanni's got on base layer, so you got your base layer t-shirt, base layer long sleeve, in this case, a Chama hoodie with a hoodie in place.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to wear a beanie. Then a third layer is you got a Halstead fleece, which is a fleece shirt, quarter zip.
Yeah.
Quarter zip fleece shirt. And that'll cover you for like, unless it's raining out, that covers you for a real wide array of temperatures.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially with the fact that you can, you know, the Chama and the Halstead fleece, you can zip them down to like your sternum or even a little bit lower. Really opens it up and lets you get a lot of heat out, you know, if you need to dump some heat.
Oh, yeah. I find when I'm going up a hill and you got that on, I think just rolling my sleeves up to my elbows and then unzipping those couple zippers, it makes a huge difference. Huge. Rather than stopping and taking all that garbage off, you know.
Yeah, and another thing with the hood and, you know, with not having the hat, it's when I'm climbing up that hill and you're trying to dump that heat, just ripping that hood off, you know, uncovering your head, there's no other better way to dump heat than just getting everything off your head.
Takes a big deep breath. And then the Obsidian field pants, which are like not that synthetic-y stuff.
No. They're made out of the same material as the Knabs were. They just have a few extra technical pockets on them around the legs. They don't, that like the Knapp kind of has that cargo-y pocket that sticks out a little bit more. These are a little bit
sleeker, slimmer, profile. Sleeker profile. They move them off the side. The Knapp's got the pocket that kind of sits up front.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked them. I like those pants.
Right.
Yeah, a lot. But so yeah, it's a merino wool with like a ripstop material in them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then a couple like the crotch, the inside of the bottom of the pant legs where your feet can rub together. There's a little patch of synthetic material to give the pants a little bit of stretch and a little bit, you know, wear resistance in the high wear areas.
And those pants are good for, again, huge temperature ranges.
Yes.
Like running some LJs with them, you're good for like in the freezing, below freezing mark.
Yeah. I think where a lot of people mess up is they start to think about, and I did it for a long time, and I actually learned this from skiing when we used to sell ski clothes, is we advise people to, hey, when you're in the lift line at 8 o'clock in the morning, start cold.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same thing when you're like at your tent eating breakfast. It's okay. Be a little bit cold. Like, especially elk hunting, it doesn't take but 100 yards. And, like, that's the temperature you're going to be working with, you know, and your body temp that you're going to be working with for most of the day, right? So start cold, start a little bit uncomfortable, and don't bring that extra layer of clothing, the big down jacket, just so you can have your coffee comfortably, you know?
Yeah.
And I think people, in place of the down jacket, if you think about it, you could just stay in your sleeping bag a little bit longer. Eat your breakfast in your sleeping bag. Then get out, get dressed, and go.
Well, we've done in the past too, to because you already, you know, you got your sleeping bag with you.
Yeah,
I've spent a lot of time on glass and tits in my sleeping bag.
Yeah,
you know, weather depending. If it's just like cold and windy and just kind of miserable, I'll oftentimes hop in my sleeping bag when I'm just posted up somewhere watching. I'll just do that to stay warm. Or like you said, just keep your sleeping bag wrapped around you and eat your breakfast, and then. If you're carrying around a giant puffy, like a giant down pants and down jacket for those like moments in camp, save that and just use your sleeping bag as an insulation layer.
Right.
Instead of having all the more garbage with you. But at the same time, you got to be super careful that you don't get your sleeping bag wet. You know, even, you know, it's like, yeah, down a wet down bag is real bad. A wet synthetic bag, you still got good insulation, but it's just uncomfortable. It doesn't work as good, and it's uncomfortable. So you got to, like, keep your bag dry. But it is. It's got to be really extremely cold before I start bringing, down jackets and down pants and stuff with me. I mean, like, way cold.
So we got the pants, a couple of accessories that I have. I won't be wearing them, but I'll at least have them in my pockets at all the times, and it'll be a pair of, like, work glove style gloves, and then a merino liner glove. And the liner glove is probably more for like a, you know, just to kind of take the chill off, or if I feel like I'm getting really close and I just want to cover up the sheen of my hands.
Yeah.
You know, something to do that.
Practice shooting in those gloves then?
Yeah. I haven't done
it. It's a way different feel, yeah, man.
That's a good thing we should talk about, because in general, I didn't shoot enough with sort of like, like, I'm always wearing my bino harness. I never shoot without my bino harness on and my rangefinder. I try to just, like, wear the hat that I'm going to be shooting in. But over the last week, like a few days prior to leaving on this last trip and then the last couple days, I started putting on, like, a 20-pound pack with my .44 on my side, bear spray on my side, you know, the GPS hanging off of me, wearing the shoes I'm going to be hunting in, and just really, you know, zipping up, like, doing things like putting the hoodie on and zipping it all the way up and then shooting. That feels a lot different. Like, I have a kisser button on my string now, and when I have a hoodie on, a lot of times that kisser button doesn't hit anymore, you know? Just that little bit of extra material, it feels a little bit different. But I've shot enough to know that, you know, at 50 yards, even if I'm not feeling that kisser button, as long as I'm, you know, lined up through my peep and everything looks good, you know, I'm shooting fine. But, yeah, that's very important to do. Is that all this stuff you need to be, you know, at least hopefully towards the last week before you go on the hunt, is be shooting, wearing all this stuff, you know, especially the backpack, because it feels different. And you really want to make sure that you're just not impeding, like, the string, whether it's on the draw or the shot itself.
Yeah, you're talking about a bino harness or bulky sleeves.
Right.
Yeah. You got to experiment with it all. So that's why you're wearing the merino liner gloves. And then you got like a pair of hybrid shale gloves, which are kind of like a have like work glove elements to them.
Yeah, heavy duty leather palm.
Yep.
Breathable wool back.
Yeah, good, like pretty versatile glove. And then I always use one too, net gaiter. I love those things.
Yeah. I like items that have, as I was building this list, I was thinking about how many items I have that have like are multi-purpose. And I was thinking, you know what? That net gaiter, I'm like, all right, I would want to be wearing a beanie. You can wear that thing like a beanie, and sure, there's a hole in the top of it, but you do it sometimes. You walk around with your net gaiter on your head.
I use mine for all kinds of things. So I use it for its intended purpose as like a warmth device.
Yeah.
I use it so you're not burned in the back of your neck, because it's amazing how many times, like, you can burn your neck 5 times a year.
Right.
Like, it doesn't get, you know what I mean? Just like, it doesn't like tan up kind of like how your lower arms do, where you just like eventually they just become like impervious to burn. So you can even be out, in October and like bake your neck all over again.
Right.
Or your ears. So I'll just use it like that. Warmth, sun protection. Sometimes I put it up on my hat. When your hat just gets uncomfortable, I'll put that thing on for a while. And then the main thing I use it for is, especially hunting in Alaska in the early season when you have like 20 hours of daylight or 18 hours of daylight, I'll use it over my eyes to sleep and for nappy time too. So I'll just take that net gaiter and I just kind of fold it up and wear it like a eye piece, and it allows me to conk out and sleep good. And then I do it enough where if I wake up and it's kind of like an emergency situation in the middle of the night or whatever, I'm not like confused by it. Like I just noticed to like lift it up, you know?
Yeah.
And it really helps me get those 20-minute naps in, and it helps at night, especially if you're in an area where, like this time of year in Alaska, you have these very prolonged periods of like kind of duskiness. It can be hard to sleep. So I just like to block my eyes so I can sleep.
Yeah.
So I use it for all that. And it's not uncomfortable to have on, because it doesn't add a lot of heat to you when you just run it around your eyes.
Yeah. But I think like with these lightweight merino net gaiters, the weight to like gain ratio.
There is no weight.
Yeah, there's almost no weight. And what you're getting out of that as a piece of warmth, I've had two instances I can think of in my head where I was like in like a very cold state, and it's like a very important part of the hunt where there's like animals nearby, or I'm having to like glass. It's like see where an animal's going, but like you need to be staying there, but you're like very cold, like shivering cold, like it's coming. And I've remembered I've had these gaiters in my pocket, put them on and put that on your neck. And I think it's almost like putting a beanie on, like just insulating your neck, keeping that blood flow, you know, warm as it's going to your head and back.
Big difference.
Huge.
I also, the main one I wear, I got a hole I cut in one part of it. So when I'm turkey hunting.
Smoking cigarettes?
No, mouth calls.
Mm.
So the hole you never even notice is there. It's a really small hole. And I usually keep it in the back. But when I spin that thing around and pull it up, like if I'm hunting turkeys, when I'm trying to like work a bird, I'll oftentimes just pull that net gaiter up over my nose.
Right.
For camouflage. And I got a little hole cut, so I just swing that hole around over my mouth, and I can take diaphragm calls in and out of my mouth, or blow calls, whatever, and put it up in that hole and use it. And then when I'm done, I just drop the thing back down in my neck and spin it around. But fishermen wear the same thing, though.
Right, the buffs.
Yeah, it's a synthetic-y material, but they wear the same thing now because people are realizing you shouldn't just be like scorching your skin all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sunscreen or not.
Yeah, so pull that thing up to block your ears. It's a great, it's like a thing that not many people use, but it's like a real gem of a item. And you're not running any gaiters.
No.
I wouldn't either in that area. One, it's for that kind of stuff, it's too loud.
Yeah, usually gaiters for me are like a deep snow.
Yeah.
When I say deep, you know, if I know I'm going to encounter 6+ inches, I'll probably put on gaiters.
Or if you're in an area that's just like tons of creek crossings or lots of like mucky hell holes and stuff. They're pretty nice for that reason. Cause when your pants are all wet on the bottoms, it just gets annoying. And if you want to climb into your sleeping bag, you got all that extra water. So when you do it like in wet snow, when it's all just caked in, it's nice to take that off and have dry lower legs and just slip in your sleeping bag at night and not have to worry about taking your pants off.
Yeah. And that's a good point to bring up too. Something that I'm going to start doing is, because I'm just going to have rain pants, right? So if we do have like a super dewy morning, or if we get that 6 inches of wet, shitty snow that you were talking about, when I'm put on my rain pants, I'm going to go out into very wet conditions. I'm going to make sure that my pants are rolled up, tucked up, the pants underneath my rain pants somehow, because I feel like what happens is that moisture like hits your cuff, like you're talking about, and it wants to travel.
It wicks up.
Yeah, it wicks up. And so then it goes to your socks, and your socks wick it. And all of a sudden that, you know, even though you're completely covered, that moisture is like gone up your pants to your socks and then down into your boot.
Yeah, moves. I never enjoy having gaiters on. Like when I put gaiters on, I'm playing the long game.
Right.
Like I'm always annoyed by them. You know, I'm annoyed by the way they feel. I'm annoyed by the noise. But in certain situations, it's so nice to pull them off and have your legs dry from the knee down when they would otherwise be full of mud, snow, whatever. So yeah. I tend to carry them more than I put them on. And it's one of those things like at the last minute, like if I'm going somewhere, I got my duffel and my gaiters are in it. At the last minute, I'll oftentimes leave them in my duffel. And they don't make the final, like I can't trim them out in my garage.
Right.
Like I can't cull it in my garage, but yeah. I can cull it at the last minute before loading my pack. I look at them like, really? And then a lot of times I'm like, no.
Yeah. It might be something that I have in the truck too. It'd be good. It'd be smart. I mean, I know what the weather's coming up, right? I've got like a couple sunny days and then we have some rain days and there's actually now they're forecasting a snow day, not a lot of accumulation, but there's definitely going to be some moisture. But yeah, if I knew that I had to hike in whatever, 2-3 hours and I'm looking at doing that through 4, 5, 6 inches of snow, probably be worth it. Even if it was a couple inches of snow, it might be worth to put them on.
Yeah.
Just for the long game.
All right. So your pack, you got a pack. This will give you a sense. Like this sounds like a lot of stuff that we're going to be talking about, but it's not because you got a 3,300 pack.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that whole deal.
Yeah. And it's the same pack I used last year. And I know it works for this. So the pack is a Stone Glacier Solo 3,300, I believe is the name. And so it's 3,300 cubic inches. It's slim, trim, tidy. The pack itself only has one pocket built into it, and then you can customize it by adding their little pullout pockets that come in different sizes. So there's little attachment points like on the backside of the it opens like a clamshell, and on the backside of that there's a couple attachment points, and then on the what would be like the what faces your back, the back panel on the inside, there's a couple attachment points too for these super lightweight what would be the fabric?
Oh, the little nylon pockets?
Yeah, nylon, yeah. I guess, right? And, yeah, ultra lightweight. You know, it just gives you a little bit of organization. But for a couple little, like, loose things, and we'll talk about that later. But anyways, yeah, it's not big. The way I can do all this is that all my gear will fit into the pack itself. And then they have that system, the load shelf system with their dry cell bag that fits in the load shelf, which basically fits between the pack and the frame, right?
So yeah, it's like a little bag. It's not quite like a dry, it's not like a submersible dry bag, but it's like a...
Yeah, I think the only reason it's not submersible is because the seams aren't taped.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So there is some breathability.
Yeah, definitely like a rainproof.
Yeah.
Like a rainproof bag, but not like a rubber. What I'm trying to say is not like a rubberized dry bag.
No. It's light.
It's like pack material.
Yeah, with a roll top.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is on the way in, all my food will go into this dry cell bag between my backpack and the frame, and I'll pack it in. And what's nice about that is as soon as I get to camp, just grab my P cord, pull it up into the tree. And it'll act as my bear bag, you know, for hanging food.
Yep.
Until, you know, hopefully we get a kill and we have to use it to pack meat out. So once I do that, I'll also probably, if we're, you know, hunting, like if we're going to be coming back to camp, you know, I'll dump all my camp gear, my cooking stuff and whatever. And then that 3,300, it cinches down so nicely that all of a sudden you go from, you know, basically carrying in a whole camp and you cinch it down to where it looks like a kid's, you know, school day pack.
That's the key about these packs is like, if you ever trail a bunch of elk through timber, let's say you're trailing, you got like 5-6 elk going down through timber, and you notice that one of those elk keeps peeling off away from the group and then coming back into the group and peeling off away from the group. That's a lot of times a bull who knows his antlers can't fit through the gaps in the trees. So all the cows can go screaming down through, and he's always like planning ahead about where he can actually go and not go with a rack that's like the widest part of his body. I've used a lot of packs. There's like a lot of packs I like, but a problem with pack, like I don't like a pack for unless I'm hunting like open country. I don't like a pack where the pack is any wider than I am.
Yeah.
Because you just never, unlike a bull elk, you never get used to having things on you that are wider than what you're used to. It's so you wind up making a lot of unintended noise going under logs, through stuff, and you're just banging that thing all the time. Not just banging it, but hanging it up. And these packs are actually like, if you got a dude, like the way the Stone Glacier packs are, if a guy's wearing one and looking at you, you don't see the pack when it's snugged up, but you don't see the pack bulging out in weird angles.
No. Not at all.
So it allows you to kind of move through without having to constantly be like remembering what the hell is going on with your backpack.
Yeah. And like this pack, like I said, there's only one pocket there. There's no lid. So there's nothing flopping. Once you cinch it down, it's just slim, trim. Nothing's going to snag. There is nothing to snag.
Yeah. There's a lot of good packs. No pack is absolutely perfect. But I do like these freaking packs a lot, man. But yeah, the pocket thing, when it's all snugged up, you love looking at it, how tidy it is, you know, but it's like this, like it's trade-offs. You put these big sleeve pockets on the outside, everything. You get like a bulkier pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's more stuff floppy and hangy. It seems like you're organized, but again, the trade-off is when it's all loaded up, like how tight and confined and quiet is that thing? I remember reading a book about the LRPs in Vietnam, the long range reconnaissance patrollers. And it would say that before they would go out, they would load all their gear on and then jump.
Right.
And you would keep jumping, and then they would use electric tape to tighten things up and keep things so they didn't rattle or bang. They would keep jumping until they could jump and make no noise. And with a pack, with these kind of packs, once you snug them down, you can achieve that like noise-free jump that you're never going to get with a lot of loose, floppy pockets all over the place.
Yeah.
So again, it takes you got to kind of rethink how you organize your gear. If you're like a big time pockets guy, you got to rethink like how everything's going to go. And the thing I find with backpacks too is I'll use a backpack for a couple years, and then my whole system conforms to the pack.
Yeah.
So then when I try a new pack, I might recognize some things I like about the new pack, but then I kind of like dislike the pack for a minute because I got to redo my whole system. Right down to like when I go to brush my teeth at night, right? If I've been using the same pack for a couple of years, like I just know like toothbrush, toothpaste,
yeah,
or whatever within it. Here's where if I've got a paper map, where's that? Where's all my stuff? And then I get a new pack and I get frustrated and I blame the pack, but really it's just getting a way to get dialed in. That's why I hate, like one thing I hate changing around all the time is I hate changing my pack all around. When I need a new pack, I'm trying to find a pack where I'm like, this is going to be my pack for years, and I'm going to hunt everything with this pack just to have it be that I just know where everything is.
Yeah.
You know, where it all goes.
No, there's a lot to be said for that because it turns into efficiency, you know? And if that means, if it costs you, it might cost you just 30 seconds one time when you're going to pull out your spot and scope and your tripod, but all of a sudden that animal walked over the ridge. You know, and all of a sudden, all you needed was one glimpse to be like, yes, that was a bull or it wasn't a bull.
Yeah.
We're not going over there. Yes, it was. We are going over there. And yeah, having that system dialed there's, you know, times when it's crucial. All right, let's go over to packed clothing.
So you bring socks to put over your boots.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do this year because
over your mountain boots or over
the mountain boots, especially. I probably wouldn't need them in
stalking socks or socks.
They're basically just a giant pair of wool socks.
Like, not with a stocking pad,
no.
Fleece pad on the bottom.
I'm just going to pull them over.
Have you tried it?
A long time ago, yeah. Last time I went quiet, we used those what are they called? Sneak Ease,
yep.
I believe.
Yeah. It's like a ninja boot.
It's a thick fleece kind of sole with basically just bungee cords going over the top of it. And you put your foot into the bungee cords, cinch it tight.
Oh, those things. Yeah.
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 Those things are incredibly, you know, quiet and soft. Oh, but I just feel like, again, the trade off, like it's only going to be used for where I have something like bedded and I got to like sneak in.
If you were stalking something on a gymnasium floor, those are great.
Exactly.
They suck.
When it gets has if an
you're
angle
on a,
to it.
Yeah, you're on a 45-degree pitch full of a bunch of rocks and stuff. They are not stable.
Right.
They're not stable.
Yeah, and it makes a huge, huge difference. We've talked about this before, but in Arizona, it's like a lot of times you're chasing this is down in Unit 10 where I had this experience, but you're chasing elk across stuff that has because millions of like pebble-sized rocks that sort of just like rub against each other.
Yeah, you know what they look like is they look like pumice.
Yeah.
They're a pumice-y volcanic rock that's like hunting on cornflakes.
Exactly. It's like the cornflake version of rocks. And when you're in a heavy-soled mountain boot, like I think for humans it's sometimes imperceptible. But I noticed that, like, one day I was like, you know what? I'm going to, my feet, I'd been in the woods for a while and my feet were starting to hurt. I'm like, I'm going to go hunt in my running shoes today, like some trail runners. And I just remember, like, coming in on some elk and being like, oh my gosh, like, how much quieter am I right now? Just because it was like a soft, malleable sole that was sort of sucking up the rocks as opposed to pushing against them. And that same morning, I noticed, I'm like, I think what happens out there is that the bulls keep bugling, right? Like they've managed it to the point where like it's like very hot, good rutting action because it's very even like numbers, like bulls to cows, right? They keep bugling. But as hunters are moving around and closing the distance, the mass of bugling sort of just kind of keeps this buffer away from you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, the wind's good. Everything's fine. But I think there's just that, like that little bit of noise where they're like, whatever that is over there that's making that walking noise, it doesn't sound like us on the rocks. Let's just slide over a little ways, you know? And as soon as you take that away, whether it's by going running shoes or putting on some sneakies or those, you know, like socks over your boots, I think it makes a difference.
What I'm thinking about trying in the future is I'm thinking about trying my just minimalist, I think they're actually called minimalist sneakers.
Mm.
Because there you could walk on a steep pitch and have a lot of agility. It's not like running around and like those things that go over your boots that are unstable. It's like walking on tussocks almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, I might try that in the future. Or those little ninja boots. Not the bungee kinds, but the little ninja socks, you know.
Yeah. No, I think those little minimalist shoes would work well for stalking, for sure.
I feel like that might be the way to go. I'll probably bring those down to Old Mexico and try them out, because that's a lot of that gravelly crap down there, too.
Right.
Okay, so you run a dry bag to keep all your extra gear.
Yeah, and again,
all
like
your packed clothes go into a dry bag.
Yeah, like a super lightweight, it's basically a stuff sack, but it's waterproof. And in there will be an extra pair of socks, a pair of base layer bottoms.
So one extra pair of socks. So you have on you a total of two pairs of socks
total
for 1 week of hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had to, I mean, if they got so crusty and crunchy, cause I feel like that's what happens after a while.
They get slicked up. Yeah.
Yeah. That if I really had to, I could probably wash them in a stream or something and hang them up. And in a day they'd be dry.
Hang them off the back of your pack when you're hiking around.
Yeah.
And they get back nice again.
Yeah. And I feel like if you do the right things, like take them off at night, put them into the bottom of your sleeping bag. So your sleeping bag's sucking the moisture out of them. Don't just roll them up and stick them into your boots, which have a lot of moisture in them that should be, coming out. Keep that whole system dry and you're going to get a longevity out of it, before those socks start to get slicked up, crunchy, like not comfortable anymore.
And the thing to keep in mind, if you're hunting an area where you got to cross bad creeks, bad, fast, slick rock creeks, put your extra pair of socks, take your boots off and don't cross barefoot though, because you slip on the rocks and bang your feet all up. But cross in a pair of wool socks and then hang them up to dry out. But that way it glues you to the rocks, man. It's like wearing felt sole waders.
Yeah. So, it protects you.
Yeah. It lets you stay on top of the rocks instead of having your feet slip down between the rocks, getting all messed up. Base layer bottoms. Maybe.
Yeah. I think they're going to go because I'm looking at the weather and it's looking like it could be cold enough where I could be hunting in those, like actually wearing them, I don't want to, again, like you're saying, I don't want to have those clothes that are just for a few minutes or you end up packing them around the whole time. But I feel like the base layer bottoms, it could be cold enough. And what I was thinking about is if somehow like my pants, my regular field pants get soaking wet and I need time to dry them out, you can wear base layer bottoms and your rain pants. And that's a very comfortable system to go out and do your thing in.
Yeah.
Right. It's not as quiet as just wearing your field pants, you know, but it's, you know, to hike out that way, you know, you can vent your rain pants if it's getting too hot, but it's a comfy way to go. And I'm old enough too now, where if I had to, I'd probably skip the rain pants. Just wear your, you know, long john bottoms and go hiking like a Kiwi.
Yeah. It's how New Zealanders hunt.
Yeah.
Shorts and long johns.
Yeah.
So puffy pants, like a synthetic puffy pant. If it's super cold, you'll add a synthetic puffy pant.
Yeah, so I'm not bringing it on this trip. It's just not going to be cold enough.
And then a puffy jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Yay or nay?
Oh, yeah. That's coming for sure.
And then you got the Boundary Storm storm-tight rain pants and then the lightweight rain jacket.
Yeah.
So like a light, thin layer rain jacket.
Yeah.
That's a risky move, but they do pack up real nice and tight and small, man.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you're on the fence about a rain jacket, go with a rain. Go with, like, rather than go no rain jacket, go the lightest little rinky-dink rain jacket you can find.
Yeah.
It's a bold move to go no rain jacket for a week.
Yeah, super bold. You know, you're gonna have to do something, whether it's an umbrella or a tarp that you're constantly setting up. But, yeah, it's a very bold move because all it takes is one storm and it's like, sure, you're like, oh, I'm going to go huddle underneath a tree. But if it blows and starts coming on there sideways, you're going to be miserable.
And then one thing I don't see here, you don't use a pack cover. Well, you do. You use pack cover.
Yeah, that'll be in there for sure.
Like a fitted pack cover from the manufacturer of the backpack.
Yeah.
Yeah. No tent.
No.
Just tarping it.
Just tarping.
10x10 tarp.
10x10 tarp.
Keep in mind when you're sleeping under a tarp, if you're 6 feet tall, don't be like, oh, I need a 6 foot tarp. A 10x10 tarp, once you put a pitch in it, it's still like there is not a ton of room to be off center under that tarp if it gets bad.
If it gets bad, yeah. And I like the whole bushcraft of using the tarp. Mm-hmm. Like I've got a couple pitches down. I set one up last week to cover up our meat. And we had some amazing winds. I mean, we definitely had gales that were hitting, I don't know, at least 50, maybe 60 plus. And what ended up happening is it's a Colorado, I think it's called Colorado tarp from Seek Outside. But it has like the little tighteners already built in.
Yeah.
So you don't have to run like knots that, you know, you used to tighten. And the cord that I had was just a little bit too skinny. It was holding just fine when it was blowing 30 and 40. But as soon as the gale hit it with 60, I think that the line just slipped through the tensioner itself. You know, I had like a 2 mil cord just trying to be light. I think if I just bump up to 3 mil, like it would take that. But I'm not expecting that kind of wind on this trip.
You know what I do that no two thoughts on when you use a tarp instead of a tent. What I do that no one agrees with me on is I make a 6-inch loop of bungee of small shot cord on every corner, every guy point. On the tarp, I put a bungee in there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I do that is I'll use mine a lot. If you're perched up somewhere glassing for the day and it starts raining or snowing, I'll often just put my tarp up just to give a comfortable place where you can stay dry and warm under there.
Yeah,
I put bungee on all my corners because I can just wrap those bungees around little branches, chunks of brush, rocks, and set it up very fast without running around trying to find stuff to tie off to. The other thing is when I do tie it off, I tie to the bungee. And that gives it some, you can pull it tight, but it still gives it a little bit of flex, which keeps the fabric from giving out and tearing or other problems you might have with trying to keep it tight and nice. And it keeps some of that flap noise down when you got a little bit of stretch in there. So I like to do it. I try to turn everybody else on, do it. No one else runs them, but I always put the bungees on mine. And when you do pitch out a tarp to sleep under, keep it low. You don't need to have your tarp. Like if you're sleeping under, not like a hangout tarp, but a sleeping under tarp, you don't need to have it way up in the air. You should crawl into that thing like how you crawl into a tent because then you don't have stuff blowing in from the sides.
Right. Yeah. No, I think like if like someone else someone else were under the tarp together, you'd probably have to go to like an A-frame style pitch, right? Where you have a ridge running from one pole to a tree or between two poles, just to give yourself the room. But if it's just me, I'll run what's called like a diamond pitch. And so I'll run off of my, one of my tracking poles, or a tree is even better because you can get a little bit higher, and then basically run like a diagonal ridge from corner to corner to the ground. And then your two other edges just sort of like come in and conform to the ground. So you've only got one end that's open. And so as long as you pitch properly and don't have that open to the wind, you know, you've got amazing coverage, and you can throw a fire, you know, right there if you want to and stay dry and nice. Like, you're always going to be open to the elements, you know, from some angle. There actually are pitches where I think you can completely close off with a tarp. I've just never done it.
There's like a, if you have a huge tarp, there's a way that you're laying on the tarp. You got a back wall. You're laying on a little bit of the tarp for ground cover.
Mm-hmm.
You got a back wall that comes up. It goes across the lid and drops down as like a wall.
Yeah.
But that's a huge tarp.
Yeah.
But you see it in old timey books.
And you'd still have two open ends though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Still got two open ends.
Yeah.
But you position it for the wind. Cause here's the thing, people don't like when you're rigging up, like for instance, Oliver Meredith, I took a picture of it. When I drew my Copper River Buffalo tag years ago, I remember I had a setup where I was sleeping under a tarp. And I was actually burning buffalo chips in a little fire. And I remember reading about that when you're setting a tarp up and you're actually heating, you know, you make a fire for warmth. In the old days, you didn't make it be that your tarp shielded the wind. You want to draft through it.
Right. So kind of across.
So you could get heat under there, but not trap all your smoke in there.
Right.
And I remember getting up and thinking how much I liked the looks of how I had my tarp and my buffalo chip fire. I snapped a picture. Walked over the edge and shot a buffalo after really coming to grips with the idea that I was not going to be getting one. But yeah, that's like a, you know, even like when you're reading really old shit about like old pioneers and old explorers, I mean, they use tarps all the time. That was like their tent
right
material. And they got way ways of pitching them. There's a book. God, what's that river book? River, now, son of a bitch.
You know the author?
No, but it's a guy in Canada. I can't remember.
Hunting book?
They do a lot of hunting, a lot of trapping. River of Deception. I can't remember. Anyways, there's a great book where these guys, it's in the 1920s. And big fur boom going on, and they're trapping in Canada and working the rivers trapping. And they always got to get to their site because they're out in the middle of the winter. And he describes their tarp setups. They got to plan 2 hours every night to get their tarp setups in such a way that they can survive the night.
Yeah.
Not using tents, but making setting up tarps in a way that you can burn wood to try to keep from freezing to death. And you always had to plan on that 2-hour setup. And these guys weren't running around with headlamps.
Yeah.
So it really cut into your day.
Right.
But I do like tarps. It's like there's like a tidiness to it that you just kind of like, man.
Yeah, and a versatility, you know. And again, you got to be ready for, you know, it's fine and dandy when it's, you know, 70 during the day and then it's like a starry 35 degree night with zero wind. It's like, who cares? Don't even set the tarp up. You can just like sleep out, right?
Yeah.
Get your head into the hood of your sleeping bag. But if it blows and then there's moisture coming in, you better like have like some experience and a plan. And one of the things that's allowing me to do this is I'm going to use a, Nemo sleeping bag that has basically like a like what they call like a bathtub floor and a tent. It basically has that built into the sleeping bag, so you don't have to bring a ground pad. It's built in, or I'm sorry, a ground sheet or tarp that's built into the bag, and then it kind of curves around your feet. So a lot of times, like especially tall guy like me, you know, your feet are sticking out at the end of whatever, or even if you're in a tent, your feet are touching like the tent wall, which can cause moisture to come in and get your bag wet.
Oh yeah, man.
So that sort of is protecting me from, you know, the moisture that you didn't plan for. And this is also a the sleeping bag system is built so that you can slip your pad into the sleeping bag. So it kind of sits between the bottom insulation and then that bathtub floor that I was talking about, the waterproof floor, which is pretty slick. Keeps you on your pad.
Yep.
You don't slide off.
Final thought on tarps. If it's bad mosquito time, like, you know,
yeah,
you know, if you're hunting like spring hunts or you're hunting late summer hunts, it just, you got to plan on that too. It just doesn't give you a break.
No.
If you got bad black flies, bad mosquitoes, and you're going with a tarp, it's like sometimes when it's so bad, you know, particularly in Alaska and other places too, it just gets so bad. It's hard to like, it's hard to maintain your sanity.
Yeah.
The bugs. And it is nice to have a mesh. When just we something were, to now and then get a break from that shit. Yeah. Man.
When we were up at Buck's, we slept out a bunch. My brother and I believe, were sleeping out. And well, worked pretty good. And, I was, and again, had it been too hot to sleep up the sleep, to zip up the sleeping bag, it would have sucked. But we were just zipping up and then basically putting on a head net.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked.
I had a thermos. Like, I had a thermocell on that trip.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. But you still need something to, well, it depends on how windy it is.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I don't agree with you on, but I know you like to use them, is you use trekking poles.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, a couple things I need them for, right? Need them to build, to pitch a tarp, possibly. Use them for hiking, especially when I got meat on my back. I think it, you know, saves your knees, saves your back, takes the stress off your joints. And I'm not bringing a tripod. So I'm going to use that pole for one of the poles for glassing.
Yeah. That's what Callahan does too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so we already covered this. You got a Nemo insulated pad, Tensor 20 pad, and a Nemo Argali 15-degree bag.
Mm-hmm.
No ground pad because your sleeping bag has a waterproof membrane. Yeah. You bring your little blow-up pillow?
Oh man,
I would not.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to.
I would not.
But I gotta say, we use these. I think they're called the. It's called a philo. I'm guessing they took like fleece and pillow and made up this word called philo.
Dude, it's a dream come true.
Oh, it's so nice.
But like, it's just like on a backpack trip. No,
exactly. And again, it's ounces. You're probably looking at, I don't know, not a half a pound.
It's bigger than your fist.
Yeah, barely. No, I think when you put in the stuff sack, it's about your like your
bigger
fist.
Than your fist.
Steve's giant fist.
Yeah, it's bigger than a powerful fist. Yeah, I love them. Don't get me wrong; it's like phenomenal. I hate myself for getting to that point in life where I have like a little pillow, a blow up inflatable pillow. But in this case, I'm not that old yet.
No, if you're gonna have to carry around all in your,
it's
back,
a base camp thing.
Yeah, and this is what I do. This is how I build my pillow, and which was nice to have the Nemo pillow because I didn't have to spend the 5 minutes, or maybe it's only two, building my pillow. It's just nice to get in your bag and just go to bed.
Not have to make a pillow.
But what I do, and it works good because it's as I'm taking off my layers, but I basically would take my puffy jacket, cross the arms, fold the hood in, and then sort of roll it up. So you kind of have this like long rectangular roll. And then I take my next layer off, which is usually my fleece, and I slide it neatly into that fleece all the way up to where the arms come out, like to the shoulders. I flip it over, and then again, cross the arms. Or no, I'll flip over the bottom of the fleece so that now you've you know, just kind of repeated that rectangular roll, but the arms are still sticking out. And then I'll fold the arms and put like a one overhand knot, try to lay it as flat as possible. And that sort of contains the puffy jacket inside, right? And it's comfortable on your, you know, face because you're not sleeping on that nylon. And then I'll flip it over so that the knot's on the bottom. And then that gets kind of tucked into the hood of my sleeping bag. And it works fine.
Pillow making.
It just like, yeah. it's a luxury for sure to not have to do that and to have your, you know, bitchin' little backcountry pillow. But I'm going to leave those 4 ounces behind.
Game calls.
You're
on a game call intensive hunt.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm going on this hunt because I love to, you know, call elk. Phelps bugle tube. four diaphragms, and really two of them are extras, but I'll bring two that are, you know, sort of softer latex, you know, for sweet little cow calls, and then two that are double, triple reeds that are stiffer for bugling. You know, I bugle as such with, you know, loud, a lot of intensity, that even those, you know, triple reed diaphragms, when you've been blowing on them for 3, 4, 5 days, a lot, if you're really bugling a lot, to whether it's to get responses or to get a bull fired up or whatever, they can start to soften up over a while. And, you know, you hate to have one that starts to break or something, you know, as you're bugling. So as light as the diaphragms are, you know, four diaphragms weighs nothing. The call I'll probably use the most over the course of a week is an external reed type cow call. Phelps's is called the Easy Estrus. And the reed sits on a board, and then there's a little castration band that holds the reed to the board. And then there's the, I guess, like the tone chamber, the sound chamber that's attached to that. And I love those because, like, you can make them loud. I mean, so loud that I'll use them to locate bulls. Just make one or two big, loud cow calls, like off of a point, and a lot of times you get a bull to answer to that.
And he's just a good American, man.
Phelps?
Jason Phelps.
Yes. Yeah, we like Jason. And then your brother and I decided to bring in a Montana elk decoy this year.
Yeah,
I would probably have not brought it in, and again, definitely if I didn't have llamas waiting for me at the other end, because it's a couple pounds, maybe even a couple pounds plus, and if I was hunting solo, it's like I'm not gonna deal with it.
And that's a two-dimensional.
Yes, yeah. It's basically it's like a printed picture onto like a stretchy, I don't know, polyester nylon blend or something, yeah, that sort of sits over this frame that you can just twist down, and it folds down into the, you know, a small little 12-inch package. But the stakes are what have some weight to them. That's what definitely adds a weight to the decoy. But your brother's, you know, fired up on using it, so we're going to try it out.
And you're bringing some 8x40 Vortex knockers.
Yeah, I'm going with the 8s.
Tidy little package.
Tidy. You know, it's probably not that much lighter, if anything, than the 10s. I mean, it's, you know, could be a percentage of an ounce, maybe. I don't know. I haven't looked into it. But I like the larger field of view, the steadiness. I feel like with, you know, bow hunting, you're a lot of times you're scanning like 100 to 200 yards of, you know, looking for elk in the timber. And using one hand because you got your bow in the other hand, or something, bugle tube in the other hand, whatever, you know. But it's just like it's steadier.
Yeah.
More steady than any else. Wider field of view.
It's not like you're trying to count annuli on a sheep or count brow tines on some moose 2 miles away. It's just like bull or not a bull.
Yeah, exactly. Or where'd they go? Yeah. Oh, there's a patch of fur. You know, their head left.
Yeah.
On that note, not bringing spotting scope or tripod. And that's a huge weight, you know, drop. That's,
yeah.
I'm probably looking at like 8 or 9 pounds that I'm dropping out of the kit there. For me, you know, going on this archery elk hunt, I mean, maybe it'll change in 5 to 10 years, but yeah, I'm not even counting points. I'm like looking for a bull and that's it. So I need to just find elk, see elk moving. And even with 8s, 3 miles away, if I see elk on a hillside, I know they're elk, you know.
And you keep your binos in your range finder in a FHF bino harness. It's got a little range finder pouch. Mm-hmm. So your range finder sits right next to your binos, easy to get at. It's got little pockets on it. So you got some wind detector.
Mm-hmm.
Basically it's like taking a talcum powder and squirting it out of a little bottle, and it shoots a little puff up in the air, and you can see what's going on.
Yeah.
Now,
invaluable.
Yeah.
Especially
when conditions are right.
Range hunting.
When conditions are right, it seems unnecessary, right? Because you just take your boot and stir up a little dust and see what it does. But oftentimes, you're in a spot where, you know, if you're in an area that's just like pine needle, whatever, you can't get like a good wind detector. And bow hunting, especially trying to walk, like sneak in on elk, man, it's like the wind is the wind is. Like the main thing you're thinking about all the time.
All the time.
And you got to pick your moments. It's like a mistake we used to make, and this is kind of why I wish I could like revisit a lot of the old, go back in time and revisit a lot of the old hunts we used to do. We used to just be like too eager to rush in and not, like a lot of phenomenal opportunities slip through our hands from not taking time to just assess and be patient.
Yeah.
Wait for the thermals to switch. What are the thermals doing, right? And like all that kind of stuff. And just being like, well, let's take our chances and go. Or you get into it and you're 90% there and the wind changes and you're like, well,
yeah,
let's just trust our luck now. It's like, no.
And sometimes you just get hosed, man. It's like everything's been going right for 2 hours and then there's just one gust that comes up your back and then blows them out.
But it is nice to have that constant. You know, I used to just use dust and seed, grass seeds, anything like that. But you know, another thing I used to do, which I actually loved a lot, I had done this a long time. I don't know why. I used to take a bird feather, just any feather I'd find, and I'd take 8 inches of dental floss and hang it off somewhere in my bow in a safe spot. The only thing that kind of turned me off to it is you had to kind of manage it.
Yeah, because it'll get wrapped up.
Yeah, but man, like,
if you're going through brush and stuff, it's going
to
get
But it used to be like now and then, I just love that thing because I'd have that little, I'd kind of like pull it out and hang it down. And on the limb of my bow, I had that dental floss and that bird feather. Man, you can get an accurate reading. But it gets wet. It gets tangled. But when it's like up and running, it was nice. It's just constant information that feather's giving you about what's going on. And you bring a little cloth for your binos. I think that's pretty important.
Oh, it is, man. It's just like maybe you're not seeing any less with dirty lenses, but it just is like anytime I haven't done it for a couple days and you wipe them clean, you're like, ah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if you miss a day of brushing your teeth and then you brush your teeth and you get that same clean, cleansed feeling.
Yep.
Same thing looking through clean binos.
The boys at Vortex gave me these things. I think I know they're available too in drugstores, but they gave me these little white packets.
Hmm.
And what I like about those is when you get sunscreen or something on them, it's a way to get them off. I usually carry one of those in my kit, one of those optics wet wipes for sunscreen or any kind of other grease or any kind of thing that doesn't want to wipe off them. But you can usually, with a clean micro cloth, you can usually get them clean and back up and running into normal. Another thing I like about the little wet wipe thing is when you get a lot of dust kind of in the, when the eye cups like spin in and out, you can kind of use it to clean everything out and keep them up and running. Butchering kit.
Yeah, I'm going to bring a Benchmade Steep Country.
That's the freaking knife, man.
Yeah, we love that knife.
Yeah.
And that's the only knife I'll be taking. No multi-tool.
Yeah, but what do you got with you for if you screw something up on your bow and need a monkey with it? Do you bring a little kit?
Yeah, a little repair kit, which will basically have all any size, Allen screw.
Yeah.
That's on the site or, you know, any of that. It's all Allen.
Yeah, but I just feel like having like a little, like the reason I carry is like, how often do you need a little pair of needle nose?
See, I was thinking that when I was packing, I was like, not that often. Especially when I'm holding that big, heavy multi-tool in my hands.
Yeah. I like it because the little saw. I don't know. And all my, the Allens for my stuff, I have an adapter, so all those little Allens are on my...
Right.
But, no, I get it. But I oftentimes find myself, like, very happy to have my needle nose pliers. Even digging out ingrown toenails and whatnot. I just use them all the time, man.
Well, I mean, the fun part about this is, you know, you go out there, and if I get worked over because not having my needle nose, then next time I'll be packing them.
Yeah, but it is. It's heavy. It's a very heavy little item. You got a little mini sharpener, which kind of you don't need because you're only going to be doing an animal, damn animal.
Or two.
Yeah, that's true.
Or two.
Two guys. Yeah. Yep.
So.
We just did a trip where we chopped up three caribou.
It's so small and so light, that little Benchmade mini field sharpener, that like I feel like it's worth it.
Yeah. We just did a trip where you chopped up three, like doing a caribou a day, and they're a sizable animal. You're glad you got a sharpener. If you're going out and you're just like, the most you're going to do is you're going to get like a animal, or you're just going to be doing a deer, I don't necessarily worry about it, because like if you got a honed up knife, it's going to get you through that plus more. But it is really small. Zip ties, for what reason?
They're just nice to have. I mean, they're in my little butchering kit section because I like to put my tag on with a zip tie.
Yeah.
You know, Montana, it's kind of a big carcass tag, and I think it comes with holes, you know,
pre-punched.
I mean, obviously, you could use P-cord or whatever. But yeah, I just like a zip tie.
I carry a couple zip ties in my emergency kit.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously, I mean, you could fix all sorts of stuff with a cable tie.
Oh, they're strong. Yeah, you can fix backpacks and stuff with them. And tag game bags.
Mm-hmm.
I still like some aspects of them. Like, there's a company, Alaska Game Bags, I used to use all the time. It's like a disposable bag, and it's like a cheesecloth material, but flies can lay eggs through it. And right. If you drop that bag in the dirt, the meat still gets dirty.
Right.
It keeps out big stuff, but it doesn't keep out fine stuff. But they're inexpensive, which is nice. And they're disposable, which is like, one, it's just part of like the disposable world, right? Everything that just gets thrown in the trash all the time is a bummer. But you're not like messing around trying to clean them.
Yeah.
And getting blood out of game bags is a chore.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now I've settled in on using the reusables. The tag bags. It's almost like a silky feeling material, and flies can't lay eggs through it. And you could bag up meat and drop it in the dust, and the meat doesn't get any dust on it.
Mm-hmm. Reusable. I think if you drug them through mud and like we're like, you know, somehow pushing that through the material, it would eventually like, you know, it would permeate and get through.
Yeah.
But,
more protection though.
More, definitely more protection. Yeah, and reusable and easy to hang.
Yep, strong. And then you got to come home, and I have to come home, and I take a 5-gallon bucket, make a mild bleach solution.
Yeah, soak them.
Or take some Simple Green, soak the sons of bitches a couple times, wash them in the washing machine, give them the old smell test, hang them out in the sun. Blood's hard to deal with.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you think you got it. You think you get it. You think you got your pack clean, and then it rains, and it just reactivates that stuff, and you realize you didn't get it clean.
Mm-hmm. Hydrogen peroxide, man.
Eats it up.
Yeah.
Gets the blood out.
That's the key. I don't use it on game bags, but on the pack, I do it a lot.
In a spray bottle?
Yeah.
Works good?
Oh, yeah.
I hear people talk about it all the time. How much do you got to put on there?
I mean, just spray it. You'll see it does the foamy thing, and then rinse it off.
Really?
Spray it, maybe scrub it a little bit.
I know you guys are always
bit.
Talking about using hydrogen peroxide to clean blood out of backpacks. I've never tried
it. One thing you have to be careful of, I think, is it's actually, it could be corrosive to, I think, a fabric.
You
wouldn't want to like spray it on there and leave it.
That's why on my backpack, I don't like to use the bleach solution.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of dicking up the stitches.
Yeah.
50 feet of 3mm paracord. Yeah. I usually carry 25 feet. But I use that weird, expensive, I can't think of what it's called, but like makes it so it's like half the width now.
Dyneema?
Yeah.
That's what it is?
I think it's something like that. Well, I got some of that.
Shit's expensive.
Dude, but it's like.
Yeah.
It's
for
like nothing.
For the guy that's really counting ounces.
It's like, well, it's extremely strong.
Right.
Very thin. And I keep it, because the thing is, depending on what kind of stuff I'm doing. If I'm really weight conscious and I'm not doing like a, if I'm doing like a not needing to be weight conscious, but in a very place where it's just very difficult to be, and there's a lot of like bushcraft kind of factors at play, like river trips, for instance, right? Like a river hunting trip where you're just constantly rigging and fixing and trying to figure stuff out, dealing with big animals. I'll bring extra paracord knowing that I might be cutting it up and doing various things with it, guying out stuff, rigging tarps. But the reason I bought that souped up material paracord is I would never cut it. It's just like a little teeny 25 foot spool that I keep always in my stuff.
Mm.
And then, because I know I got one length for like hoisting stuff up or any kind of thing.
Right.
And if I'm going to be using some, I'll grab some other like more conventional 600 pound paracord and carry it with me for just rigging. But I keep that one emergency piece intact. 25 feet.
Good plan.
I'm forbidden for cutting it up unless it's a life-death situation. Cooking in water. You got a jet boil, one fuel canister.
Oh, I thought of a little pro tip, though. I want to come back to those tag game bags. their drawstring is long enough where unless your hanging branch or post is just, you know, super thick, I'm guessing like over, you know, 6 or 8 inches. But if you've got something small that you're going to hang your bag off of, the length of cord is long enough where you can do a, and the pro tip here is that the knot that I eventually found and now use for this, and it used to kill me, but I never had like a good quick release knot for like, you know how some dudes or two people with an elk sometimes are holding up an elk quarter. And then you're supposed to be the guy tying, and then like you don't have a plan in your head for like the knot to use, and so yeah. you think you got something tied up, and they let go, and the thing just hits the ground.
Or you do a clove hitch, and you got to get back up in there and take all the weight off to get the hitch undone.
Yeah, or you end up cutting it. So I found a knot called the Siberian hitch, or I think another name for it is the Evenk, E-V-E-N-K hitch. But you can tie it. I can actually hold the weight as long as it's not like a rear quarter on a elk and hold it. And then the way you tie it is it goes over, and then to create the loop, you basically keep two of your fingers out. And then your tag end goes around the line, and you pull a loop through the loop that your two fingers are making. And then you can just release the weight and it snugs up.
Oh.
But so it's slick because one
Siberian hitch.
Yeah, it's slick. You can do it by yourself almost most of the time, and then it's a quick release. So when it needs to come down, you just pull the tag in and it's out.
I like that. I'm gonna look up the Siberian hitch.
Yeah. So if you got, but if you have a bigger, branch or log you're hanging it off of, you're gonna have to add some P cord.
So cooking in water, you got a jet boil one canister.
Mm-hmm.
Cigarette lighter. I usually carry a regular cigarette lighter and then a mini dinky cigarette lighter that I tuck away somewhere
because
It sucks to lose your lighter.
Yeah, definitely.
Or your lighter bombs out.
Yeah, you got to have two. Another thing about lighters I like to do is I like to wrap tape on my lighters.
Helps you identify your lighter so mugs you're with don't steal your lighter and just gives you like a little place to have some tape.
Yeah, duct tape on one, and maybe we have this stuff called gaff tape in camera world, and it's super tough, but like it's removable and you can write on it, so I can have some of that stuff on it. And if you use a bright color, then you can always find your lighter.
Yep. You got your drinking cup, long handled spoon. Now anyone that eats mountain house freeze dry, you need a long spoon. If you eat out of freeze dry bags, you want a long spoon, that way your knuckles don't get all full of pasta sauce.
Yeah, it's key. You can get one, I think it's Cedar Summit makes a titanium one.
That's what I got, a titanium
long handle. Super lightweight, yeah.
And in my little kit, in my little backcountry organizer, like I organize all my small stuff in an outdoor research backcountry organizer, and in there, there's like almost a spot that looks like it was made for a long handle spoon.
Yeah, and that spoon is just barely short enough. Or the backcountry organizer is just barely long enough to hold that spoon.
And I file two V notches into the handle of my spoon, and that spoon is called the double V notch, and that's how I identify my spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yanni puts a bright piece of tape around his, which is kind of a better idea because titanium spoons are like the perfect camouflage.
They are, man. They disappear.
One quart size. Nalgene wide mouth type bottle,
mm-hmm.
So you can scoop up water in it. A dromedary, it's like a big collapsible water bag, and that's like a really essential piece of gear if you got to go a long ways for your water source.
Yeah, if you have to haul water at all, or if you know you're going to be spending time, away from your water all day hunting, up on the side of a mountain, it's key. I think they make a smaller, but I think the one I have is 4 liters. And it sounds like a lot, but obviously you don't have to fill it up.
Yeah, but the small bag sucks, though. They make a lightweight small bag, but it's not durable. It'll burst out.
Oh, yeah. But I think you can get it in the durable version.
Can you?
I think so.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I do the same thing. It's like, I think mine holds 2 quarts. It's like a black material. Very rugged. I don't like water bladders in my pack that you drink out of a hose. Because the hoses freeze, the bladders leak, you got like a frozen hole so you can't drink anyways, and then all the stuff in your pack soaking wet because the bladder burst. I mess around with those. I don't like those things.
And I think what happens even more often, or what happened to me so many times, is that like the mouthpiece, a lot of them have locks on them, you know, to open and close. But you leave it open, and you set your pack down.
Yeah.
And the weight of the
pack. And that gets all your stuff
wet. The weight of the pack presses down onto your mouthpiece, and it just slowly leaks out. Yeah. Not only is everything wet, but then you're out of drinking water.
Yeah, I'd rather think about hunting than think about that dang bladder in my pack, man.
Yeah.
That thing's driving me crazy.
Now, the upside is, though, I got to say, it's sweet to just always have that, you know, like a sip of water is handy.
Oh, listen. Yeah, I didn't talk about everybody knows the upsides. I think the upsides are obvious. You stay hydrated because you're drinking all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the upside.
And just,
it's a big upside.
Calling, you know, you're getting, you know, dry mouth, you know, and you're just like, oh, a little sip of water.
Yeah. You drink away, you drink, taking for granted that drinking water is good. You drink way more water with a hose. But I've just had too many problems with those things to where I'm like, just don't use them. And I don't drink as much water as most people I find. SteriPens, which are kind of like the only thing we even use anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're always packing. I think it's Aquamira that makes the tablets. So we always have those as an backup emergency. In case. Because the SteriPen,
it's a mechanical device, man.
Yeah.
It's got a UV bulb. It takes batteries. But you can keep the thing in your shirt pocket. I mean, they're mini. But it can fail.
Yeah, ultra lightweight.
Pump can fail.
Yeah, pump can fail too.
So always carry tablets.
If you like having super pristine, clean water, for instance, this last hunt we were just on, the whole camp drank out of a puddle. I mean, it was a puddle. It's like, what would you call that thing? It's like a, not a sinkhole, but
just a little hole in the tundra with some water in it. Yeah, like a little tundra puddle.
Yeah, but like
bushel basket.
Even
diameter.
Even your kids could probably jump over this.
Oh,
thing,
yeah,
right. Small, like mushy, you know, muddy bottom. Lots of stuff floating in it. So if you don't want to drink water that has floaters, you have to pump. If you don't mind that, SteriPen's awesome. Or if you're just hunting near creeks and stuff, you know, that has clear water.
You got a headlamp.
Yep.
Black diamond headlamp.
Yeah. And I was going to find the name of it and I ran out of time, but super small, smooth, super lightweight, only runs on 2 AAAs. It's not like a mega beam headlamp, but it's bright enough where I've run at night with it if I have a fresh set of batteries, but you can dim the light on it. Is it called the Storm? No, the Storm is a bigger one. Might be called the Ion.
You talking your little mini one with the retractable cord? Or that's just your
emergency
one?
No. That's my emergency one. It's the one that's got the little, it's like, it's operated by swiping and touching the face.
Yeah.
You didn't like it. But
it's too tricky for me.
Super small, super lightweight. You can lock it so that it doesn't come on in your pocket, which I like. But yeah, it's nice. And since we're on headlamps, I carry one of those Petzl E-Lights, which is, I don't know.
The size of a
3/4 ounce.
Yeah.
It's super lightweight. It runs.
So if you took a stack of 4 or 5 quarters and stacked them up, that's about how big that little thing is. I keep one in my kit.
Yeah, it runs on 2 CR2032 batteries and surprisingly bright. Like I've had, I think you've even borrowed it once. We were on a hunt.
You could use it as your primary light.
Yeah.
But now and then you get into like when you're out, you just get into some like crazy nighttime situations and it's, you know, it's nice to be able to, if you need to, work into the night.
Yes.
And not have, you know, not be buttoned up against the darkness. Then you got an extra release. That's a thing, man. Like that's a real vulnerability.
Very.
And those things get lost.
They do.
Yeah.
I haven't personally ever lost one, but I definitely had clients over the years that lost them and wouldn't even have a replacement at camp, you know?
I had to hike out and drive 70 miles to buy a release.
Ooh. There you go. Right there.
Yeah.
Carry the extra release.
70 miles to get a release.
And they're not like...
And I couldn't find the release I had, so I had to start messing around. Yeah.
Yeah. And shoot it, you know? I was... I put in my notes here to shoot it because... You know, up until a week ago, I hadn't shot my extra release for probably about a year. And It feels very similar, but it is different than my regular release.
And so here's a little redundancy. You're bringing some bear spray.
Yep.
And you're 44. Each of those things, I see it. Each of those things is problematic. Anyone who's been hosed by bear spray and a bear spray accidental discharge, which I have been done, it's like that makes you kind of hate that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather get hosed by an accidental bear spray discharge than an accidental 44 discharge. A guy in Colorado was just like, which doesn't even have a grizzly, so I'll never understand this. Some dude in Colorado that's like scared of black bears,
mm-hmm.
tripped over a tent stake in the middle of the night. He's going out to take a growler in the morning, trips over a tent stake and blows a hole through his own wrist with his bear gun. I don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they're Rambo, man. It's like... Yeah.
Yeah, I feel it is redundant, but recently two guys from Malton. They were together.
Yeah. Bow hunters are a high risk.
Yeah, in Montana. And I want to say that one of the bear sprays didn't work, and that was the guy that ended up getting mauled.
Yeah.
The other, his buddy, sprayed the bear and eventually got the bear off him, but the guy ended up with, some ridiculous amount of stitches,
Yeah, but again, neither of them are perfect.
Nope.
Neither are perfect. It's probably good to have a little redundancy. The other thing is, I can't remember the percentage of times, but oftentimes when a couple of guys are hunting together and one of them's getting mauled, the other one of them, the guy that's getting mauled, in addition to getting mauled, winds up getting shot.
That does happen.
Because people get panicky and they're not trained up in that kind of handgun use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's statistics. They just did this big meta analysis of all these bear encounters over the years and what happened and who did what and what the what. And people hate to hear it because people want to think that handguns are the answer to everything.
Yeah.
Right. So when they did this thing and they come out and say, like, statistically, pepper spray is better.
Yeah.
People get pissed because they act like this finding is somehow meant to be an attack on guns.
Yeah.
So people can't even like hear it clearly. Right? But they're both imperfect. I don't know that the answer is to have both with me, but they're both imperfect.
Yeah. And speaking of,
I think being smart, trying, in addition to everything else, trying to be very aware of your surroundings and also knowing how to behave in the initial moments of a bear encounter,
right,
are very important. Like before it comes, before it's where you're shooting spray at them, before it's when you're shooting guns at them and whatnot, there's like ways to behave in that initial moment.
Right. Yeah.
We have a lot of luck. We got false charged by a grizzly, but we run a lot of bears off.
Yep. I think, just like being aware of the landscape that you're in. I think those tight, close quarters sometimes of like timber, if you're near a grizzly bear or something's, about to happen, like give the bear space to move around you, right? Like don't get caught in that spot where, especially if you knew the bear was there, that you're in like confined quarters, with it. Like obviously you can just walk the other direction if you see one a couple hundred yards away,
Yeah,
create space.
Create space if it's far away. If it's up close, create space, but not like a retreat. It's like the thing, like the minute before things are too tight to establish a very commanding presence.
Yes.
A loud, big, tall, confident. If there's two guys, they're standing close together, establishing a very commanding presence.
Yeah.
You do not want to come here. I'm not coming at you. Like, the human is not going at the bear like he's going to go wrestle him. The human is not running away from the bear like it's a wounded elk running off through the woods. But the human is being like, I am here. I do not intend on moving.
Right.
But it's also different, man. And you talk to people that do get scratched, and sometimes it happens. There's no time to think. It's not like they like tried this and tried that. It's just all of a sudden there's a bear chewing on them.
Yep.
But yeah, so you got your bear spray and your shooting iron and your bow and arrow and your GPS. With a chip.
I'm still going to carry it. I know that now we can all have our maps downloaded on our phones.
I don't like the battery life on phones, though.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. You know, if I had this, if I was able just to pop in a couple fresh batteries into my phone, and again, I'll have a the Goal Zero charger, which has two charges. And I know if I run it in airplane mode, I can get multiple days out of it, but I just don't trust it yet.
I like being able to take a couple lithium double A's and throw in my GPS and have that thing on for 48 hours.
Right.
If I want. You do use a paper map.
Yeah, and again, that's a redundancy, but, you know, again, the GPS could go down. You could lose it.
And it's nice being able to sit and plot with someone else.
Yeah, and just look at it big picture.
Yeah, it does help you get up. It helps you, like, spatially. Even though you can go look at everything on a GPS, it's, like, spatially it's sometimes nice to get a big picture view of where you're at.
Yeah, and, you know, if I was hunting, an area that I had been hunting for 5 years, and just like a general zone that where I'd walked, you know, almost every trail or over every knob or, and just knew it, I wouldn't need a map.
Yeah.
You know, maybe wouldn't even carry a GPS.
No, there's a lot of situations where I wouldn't, but hunting like large new areas, I always like to have a paper map. Where the main place I think I'm going to be hunting, I have it built as the center of the map. Wet wipes, but no teepee.
Yep.
Just wet wipes.
And actually what I realized on this
I'll tell you why that's wrong.
Okay.
You can't burn them.
No, I know. I know you don't like that, but I bury them properly.
And then you're bringing
a butt pad. They biodegrade.
Why are you bringing a butt pad?
Like a sitting pad.
Sitting pad?
Yeah. All right. Keep my butt dry. And I think it's multi-use, you know. You could use it to put, you know, food or, you know, work some gear out on and you know, underneath the tarp. It's nice to have like a second place that's off the ground. And then for taking a nap, you know, you could. It's like just a little extra cushion in the woods if you're in a rocky spot.
No, I carry one off, but I just wouldn't carry one on that trip. If I was doing a glassing intensive trip, I'd like to carry it. Then it depends on the ground. I just had one up in the tundra, and I never used it because the tundra's so comfortable to sit on.
Mm.
But it was dry.
Right.
So, yeah, I do. Yeah, I do like butt pads. I like that little outdoorsman's back, that little outdoorsman's butt pad. And I got just a place on my pack where I can kind of wedge it in perfectly. So you got your hunting license. That's smart.
Yep.
Smoke in a bottle. We already talked about that. Wind detector. You are bringing your phone just for snapping pictures.
That's right.
You get a signal on top of the mountain, you can check in.
That's right.
See how the kids are doing. You got a recharger. How many charges can you get off on your phone off that charger?
Two.
So personal hygiene, mini toothpaste, toothbrush with the handle cut off, which I think is something people do that's silly. But okay. Extra contact lenses, and then a little thing of Bonner soap.
Mm-hmm.
That pepperminty Bonner soap, dude, is a, yeah, when you're getting like itchy head and stuff after 4 or 5 days, that stuff resets the clock.
Yep. Yeah, and you could use it, you know, or if you had like a major, you know, like a butchering session, you know, and you're just like up to your elbows in blood and you just want to clean up. Yeah, and it's like cardboard, but the inside's lined somehow.
Yep.
It probably has, I don't know, close to a tablespoon of soap in it, which for Dr. B's is a lot.
Oh yeah, man, you hit the nether parts in your noggin in a little creek wash. You come away feeling like you've been back home for a couple of days.
Yep,
I love that stuff. So then in your outdoor research, little backcountry organizer, you got a minimal first aid kit.
Yep.
My general first aid kit is, my general first aid kit is triple antibiotic ointment, handful of Band-Aids, gauze, and med tape.
Yeah, there's only so much you're going to be able to do, you know. I do have like a big wrap in there, and I have some of this stuff called combat gauze. Where, God forsake, someone did take a gunshot wound or a broadhead, you know, across the arm, or like we basically you'd have just like a major, major open wound, It's a gauze that you wrap or you put on the wound and then wrap, you know, your bandage around it. But the gauze itself has a clotting agent in it.
Yeah, I used to carry the packets.
Yeah,
of the clotting agent stuff, but that stuff expires pretty quickly.
It does.
Like you'll have it in your pack for a year, then realize it's all crystallized.
Yeah. I had to buy a new one for this fall.
If you carry it, you got to keep up on it. But yeah, if you had like a major blood incident, it's good to have. But if you're going to do it, make sure that it's that you're renewing it all the time because they do go bad.
Yeah.
Another thing, sometimes I have to carry with me. Just depends. Is depending on where I'm at, EpiPen.
Right.
For anaphylactic shock, just because of certain insects and stuff.
Good thing to mention, I think there's like the small drugs in that first aid kit are what could really help you and keep you out there longer. Like you the other day gave me, I had like a started to get a sour belly when we were on Prince of Wales, and you gave me an Imodium AD, and one pill cured me. That's all it took.
Yeah, I carry, and I just buy boxes of the little single serves.
Yeah.
Because they've got a good protective coating on them.
Yeah.
I carry a handful of ibuprofen packs, just little single serving things. There's a pocket in my organizer you wedge them in. A couple packs of ibuprofen, a couple packs of Tylenol, an Imodium AD type thing, and then a antihistamine.
Antihistamine's a good one, yeah.
Type thing. And then I carry in my kit too, I was talking about in my little med kit. And my med kit, like I said, it's the size of like, it's smaller than a, much smaller than a wallet. A couple Band-Aids, a couple gauze strips, a really small thing of med tape, but also carry a handful of alcohol swabs to clean out cuts. And again, it's like nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like sounds like a lot added up, but you put it all together, it's just like a little, it's like a little teeny plastic envelope. And this whole thing fits into an organizer that's, I mean, how big is the organizer? It's like a sandwich.
Yeah,
bigger
depends
than
on how much you put in
big,
there.
Big fatty sandwich.
Mine actually, if I overload it with things like, and it won't be for this hunt, but let's just say for another hunt, and put in like a choke wrench, and then the boar snake for cleaning out a gun if you happen to jam it in the mud or something, it can get over a pound. Like it can have some weight to it, but for this hunt, it'll be roughly around a pound. You know. But yeah, on top of the first aid kit, there'll be, the emergency survival kit, which, you know, fire starter, in there, I have, and I'm running the, I have two fire starters. Actually, I do have some, cotton balls of Vaseline. And then I also have these little, they're called Esbit fuel cubes. And you like
the TSA guys will steal those.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful. If it's your main kit that goes everywhere with you, careful, because they don't like them.
Yeah. But that thing burns, I think, for like 12 or 15 minutes. Like it's supposed to be used in like a cooking system, but it's a little cube, and you just sit there, and it like, I forget like the heat that it produces, but it's a lot. But like in a shitty, wet, you know, fire building situation, you'd have like a flame that just basically sat there for 12 minutes as you tried to like, built a fire around
No, they're nice to have. My kit is like, I take one of Dirt Myth's chew tins,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of dual purpose, because I take cotton balls, rub Vaseline into them, pack them in there, then put a couple cedar knots in there, and that's my like fire kit. And you got like a little Vaseline backup, and depending on where I'm at, I'll pull that thing in and out depending just general conditions. Like if I'm hunting down in New Mexico, I'm probably not carrying a right
because a lighter is all you need.
Yeah, because I you know, you got, you can be able to pull it together. If you're in an area that's just like impossible,
mm-hmm.
Southeast Alaska, I got a fire kit.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, you got a lot of the stuff you just got to make calls on all the time.
Yeah. I have like a little, there's like a little super mini compass in there. I don't carry a big compass, just, you know, in my pocket. So it's in there. There's like a little a fishing line, a hook. But again, it's super, super small. But the other things in the backcountry organizer, that like my spare lighters will be in there. The stuff called tenacious tape, which is basically,
I carry a little piece of that.
It's like, reinforced nylon tape that, it's like a patch for if you rip like your outer shell or, you know.
Yeah, I carry the patch form where it's like, basically it's like having a square of paper
mm-hmm.
in your bag. It's just one patch. It's like a 2-inch circle that is tucked somewhere in my little kit, and you can fix stuff with it.
Yeah.
And it's good to have. And again, that's the kind of thing where depending on what's going on, you pull it in and out. I do carry a little teeny baggie. You got it here, extra batteries.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to like line your stuff up, line your gear up to that it all is using the same stuff as much as you can.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have that. I got triple A's in my headlamp. I got double A's in my GPS. And then the Steripen runs on the, I think it's a CR123.
Yeah. So I use a CR123 flashlight. And then I got my headlamp runs on a CR123 as well. So, I'm sorry, my headlamp and my Steripen run on the same battery. And I always try to bounce around and get it right. You always wind up with some outlier item that they don't make that way. But I generally like to try to like duplicate up, so I got a couple extra batteries with me that work for various different things. Then you got orange flagging tape. Again, very small. You take like 10 feet of that and roll it up in a little ball. It's like the tip of your pinky finger.
Mm-hmm.
Great to have, especially hunting by yourself. You take a shot, hang that tape where you were standing.
Yep.
March over to where you know the animal was standing. Hang a piece of tape. When you find first blood, mark that with the tape.
Yeah. And again, it'll be redundant because now I pretty much do all of that with my GPS. But man, is it easier to look over your shoulder and be like, oh, there's, especially when you're like on a shitty blood trail and you're trying to figure out like a general direction of travel possibly. And you can look back and say, oh, I can see kind of like a corridor that the elk could have run through, you know, from where I am now, so, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And if you're if you take a 300 yard poke at something in rough ground, you like go running over there, which you shouldn't do. Don't run over there. Take your time, figure out what's going on. But you go over there, can't figure out what was happening, where it was. And then you realize that you lost track of where you were standing or laying down. That's when trouble starts. Because when you mark your location with something, the tape, whatever you leave there, I like tape a lot, but anything, a piece of clothing, mark that spot. Because then when you go over there and you're like, oh, I think it was right here, but I can't find any hair, no blood, no nothing. And then you're like, where was I again? If you mark it, you'll go back there and you'll look and you'll remember it was right there. You need to like, you have to plan on worst case scenario when it comes to reconstructing something. If you got two guys, it's great because one guy stays put and one guy goes over there, and the guy that stays put can direct you right to where that thing was. If you're by yourself, you got to have a plan.
Yep.
We already talked about a backup headlamp. And you carry a little mini thing of super glue?
Yeah.
I just feel like that shit be leaking everywhere, making my stuff all gluey.
No, it's like a, you know, it's always a brand new one, this unopened. And it's like a little mini deal. It says one time use, but I mean, like, there's enough in there where you could use it a few times. But cuts, man, or even like, you know, when you're working with blood a lot, your hands dry out.
Yeah.
And I'll get these just wicked cuts that will not heal, and I'll just clean it out and super glue like,
oh, I got
the
you.
Cut and
I hear
round
people,
it.
You know, I've never tried it, but I know people.
Oh man,
do
it. It works. Oh, yeah, it works great.
All right, so run down like your food for like backcountry hunting.
Yeah, super basic. Breakfast is going to be this is new instant oatmeal we found called Umpqua Oats, and it's like 100 times better than the Quaker stuff.
Oh yeah, way just less. Like, it's like not like all nasty sugary crap.
Yeah. Yeah. The Quaker is like eating like a freaking candy bar or maybe even worse for breakfast. And it's just, I always feel like with Quaker, it's like 30 minutes later, I'm like, oh, I'm hungry. I should eat a bar. These Umpqua Oats are legit. You can get ones that have like a mix with like quinoa and other grains and stuff in them, but like,
no,
eat
it's
it.
It's good.
Like
I was skeptical at first, but it's very good, man.
But sometimes I'll have a bar in there too, or I'll have a bar soon on, you know, in the morning, and then the Starbucks via coffee. Lunch and snacks, Pro Bars, and Snickers.
Well, for the Starbucks V8 coffee, I always like to carry a little non-dairy cream or two.
Mm.
It's the kind of guy I am, man.
Yep. Yeah. Like your coffee white. Lunch. So I'm not doing any kind of sandwiches. I'm going to have like a sandwich for day one. It's going to be like heavy and packed in, but no real sandwiches. It's going to be, lunch is going to be very snacky. So I'll have like a little bit of salami, some cheese, maybe like a banana and a baguette for the first day, because it's something that's going to be eaten the first day and it'll be gone. After that, it's going to be bars, jerky, custom trail mix. That's pretty much it.
Yep.
just gonna have to survive on that.
And then chicken bouillon cubes just for at night with hot water to drink.
Yeah, or yeah, if it's cold and shitty middle of the day, yeah, you heat up some water, put a little chicken bouillon cube in there, and it's yeah, it's very nice.
And then for dinner, you're going with house.
Going with house.
Then you usually chase that with a candy bar.
And then I've been having a lot of cramps recently. And so I've been, I got this stuff called Noon Electrolytes, which come in like a handy little vial. I think there's 10 or 12 of the deals in there. So I'm going to try to drink one of these electrolyte tablets every day. You dissolve it in water, you know, it gives your water a little flavor too, which is nice. But try to keep my cramps down and my calves. And then a stick of salted butter. I'm packing that. Extra calories, man. There's like a few things that have more calories.
Yeah, I like to put butter in my house.
Yeah.
And then also this time of year, you find a lot of bleats, and it's nice to have a little butter
because
you find like legit queen bleats out there, you know?
Right.
One of the better mushrooms out. Then you got your first day food, which is just your heavy junk. Just start out right.
Yeah. So, it's like a heavier load. And I think you're roughly looking at two pounds of food a day to get the calories that you need. I'll be looking at 15 pounds of food roughly. But yeah, that it's nice to have like just normal food one more day until you just go into full on like bar and mountain house mode, you know?
Yep.
And we don't have to get into the depth here, but I figured just because we were talking about all this stuff I'm going to be carrying into the woods. I know people are wondering probably what I'm carrying for my bow and archery, you know, other archery equipment. And so it's a Prime Centergy bow, Easton Full Metal Jackets, very heavy. Total arrow weight for me is like 535 grains, which is, you know, well over 100 grains heavier than a lot of people shoot. 125 grain slick trick.
I've never heard of that. What is that?
What's that? The slick trick?
Yeah.
It's just a, it's similar to like the Muzzy. Gosh, which Muzzy is that? But it's basically like a, imagine a field point with a sharp, like chiseled point on it. And then it's got slots cut through it.
Yeah.
And so you put a blade through it this way, you know, and then another blade crosses it. Like there's a slot in the middle of this.
Like you assemble it yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So which is nice because it's got replaceable blades. So if I I can carry like two sets of replaceable blades, which I will. And so in case I like.
So it's a four-bladed.
Yeah.
It's a four-bladed fixed.
Four-bladed fixed. Not mechanical. Yeah. And super, super sharp. And that's the nice thing I like about it. If I like happen to miss an elk and, you know, shot one into the dirt, I could just take out those two blades, replace it with two freshies. And I've got it, you know. Super sharp, yeah, ready to go.
Then you got your release.
Yeah, I think it's called the Itty Bitty Goose Scott release. It's old. It's 10-plus years old.
Yeah, I used to have those, and now I got one of those Spot Hogs, but I used to have that. I used to use that Scott release all the time. All right, that's Yanni's backpack, man. Isn't that exciting?
It is, man.
Yanni's going on a hunting trip.
Hunting trip without Steve. I didn't even invite Steve. That's because I know his schedule. I look at Steve's calendar every day, so I know I couldn't invite him anyway.
To bring it full circle, I feel as jealous as when my kid went fishing with another man. All right, man. Thanks for tuning in.